This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. For 23 years, my next guest was music director and conductor of the Oregon Symphony, which he helped build from a small regional ensemble to a nationally respected orchestra. He's now its music director laureate and is also the new director of conducting and orchestral studies at the Juilliard School. And he's the new music director of the Tokyo Metropolitan Symphony. He was among the first generation of African-American conductors and has had an amazing career. I'm pleased to welcome James DePriest to the studio today. James,
it's my pleasure to be here.
You've done so much. I mean, conducting, you played percussion in jazz ensembles, you studied film, you've published two books of poetry. I'm not sure where to start, so maybe I'll just start at the beginning. Your aunt was the legendary singer Marian Anderson.
Yes.
Did she get you into music? Was there music in the home?
Well, I think, yes, there was music in the home all the time. My mother, my father, they were amateur singers. And of course, my aunt was the one in the family who wanted to pursue a career. So that it was a musical household. And I think that was something that was subsumed right from the outset. I really never planned on pursuing music as a career. The only hint that I had that not maybe I should, but that there might be something there, my aunt Marian used to give me scores and recordings. She was recording for RCA at the time, and so I had many recordings of the Boston Symphony and these pocket scores, these Eulenberg or Boosey scores. And I didn't understand exactly what the point was, except that I would spend most of my time listening to the recordings and looking at these scores. And this is certainly before digital and even before the LP, and you had extended play 45s with breaks throughout the
right,
symphony.
Right.
But there must have been a subliminal impact there. But I plan to be a lawyer, so that's why my path to the podium has been rather circuitous, going to the Wharton School of Finance and Commerce and graduating with a Bachelor of Science. And I'm sure that the people at the Wharton School wonder where they went wrong or why I was there in the first place. But yes, I was interested in a variety of things, a variety of kinds of music. And it wasn't until I was on a State Department tour in Thailand in 1962 that I found that conducting that I had been doing piecemeal was clearly the thing that I wanted to do. But there are many people who decide that a certain career is for them, but the question is whether their career needs them.
Right. Well, now, it's 1962, and the U.S. State Department did a lot of this back in the 60s.
Right.
They'd go to different musicians and groups and say, we're going to send you to Brazil, we're going to send you to Africa.
Right.
They came to you and said, we're going to send you to the Far East. As what? As a percussionist?
As
a conductor?
It was an American specialist in music, because it was a matter of everything. Do you conduct orchestras? Yes. You've done seminars about American music? Yes. You have piano works that you've written that I've been studying composition with Vincent Persichetti? Yes. Well, there'll be recitals of those. And so it was a matter of doing, because I asked that question. I said, what do you want me to do? Well, it's the American Specialist Program of the Department of State. And so they wanted a musician, sort of all round, and that was the role that I was fulfilling, and it was different in every country. But the first country was Bangkok, and the official job that I had for the State Department was to bring new music to the king for His Majesty's Jazz Ensemble. Now, it was a big band.
Wait a minute, the king of Thailand had
correct.
A jazz ensemble. That's a pretty progressive thing.
And and so I did. I talked to Neil Hefti and Quincy Jones and Stan Kenton and got a variety of new arrangements. I had not really heard the band. And sure enough, I'm there, and I get a call to come over to the palace one night and bring these new charts. And that was very nice. But by that time, the bug of perhaps wanting to conduct had bit me, and I said, are there any symphony orchestras? So I went to a rehearsal of the symphony orchestra. The United States Information Agency wasn't concerned about my conducting orchestras. I was supposed to be there for the king and the jazz. That's fine. So it ended up that I was fulfilling that mission by organizing concerts with the jazz musicians who happened to be in Bangkok playing at most of the nightclubs. And then during the morning, I would go to the rehearsals of the Bangkok Symphony Orchestra. And they made the mistake one day of asking me if I'd like to conduct a part of a rehearsal. And that was the first time, I guess, I'd conducted a symphony orchestra in the symphonic repertoire, but it had been like I'd been doing it all my life. And it felt very natural. And so I stayed and I did a concert, and they asked me to come back and do more concerts. And that continued during the trip. I contracted polio during the same time, so I had no idea whether I'd be able to conduct or not. But fortunately, I was able to recover sufficiently to.
Well, how old were you at this point?
26.
26. So yeah. In one trip, you discover a career, contract polio, meet the king of Thailand, arrange his jazz band.
Right.
I mean, what do you do for an encore?
Well, it was time, though, I thought at 26 that you should have decided what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And although it might be nice to have a multiplicity of things in the background, I knew that I wanted to conduct. And when I came back for rehabilitation in Philadelphia, I remember writing to Leonard Bernstein, whom I met before I left, and Lenny said one of these typical Lenny things. Well, it's great. You'll go on this tour. You'll find out all the things you can do and the one thing you can't do without, which is exactly what happened.
Mm.
And he suggested that, as unfortunate as the polio might be, that if I wanted to pursue music as a career and conducting, that I should put it to the test.
So there's no logistical. I mean, the conductor needs to be up high.
Well, that's what I thought, and I had no frame of reference for anyone, certainly in a wheelchair. That would be completely out of the question, or walking with crutches and braces. So I seriously thought about chucking the whole idea, and I was at that time after rehabilitation. I was using crutches and braces, and. Remember going over for the Metropolis competition, which he suggested I entered. That was the most prestigious at the time. And I'm sure that the other candidates, the other conductors, when they saw this apparition coming in, said, okay, we don't have to worry about him. But the competition was very interesting, especially in the first one that I was in it twice. And the first year, to show the gap between the level of the American conductors who were in the competition and the ones who won, the winner that year was Claudio Abbado.
Wow.
And
one of the great conductors of his generation.
Absolutely. So it was revelatory for me. I was delighted that I'd gotten to the semifinals, having just decided that this is what I want to do. But what do you do? And Lenny wrote me a letter back at the Rehabilitation Center saying that he thought I had a bright future, that I needed more experience. And so I went back to Thailand and conducted extensively there in Bangkok with three orchestras working almost nonstop around the clock, morning, afternoon, evenings. Returned to the United States the following year and entered Metropolis and won one of the first prizes and was Lenny's assistant with the Philharmonic.
Wow. We're speaking with James DePriest, who obviously is a conductor with a very colorful tale to tell, and we're just kind of getting started here, but let's take a break and actually hear some music from Vincent Persichetti. You mentioned you were studying composition with him, and you've continued to champion his music over the years. This is a recording by James DePriest of the Persichetti Symphony No. 4. You're listening to Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. My guest is James DePriest, the conductor, and a man with an amazing story that we're in the middle of, really. I mean, we've already discussed Marian Anderson, your aunt, great singer of the 20th century, first black singer at the Met. She was not a civil rights. I mean, we did a whole program on her last year with clips of her actually saying she didn't consider herself a civil rights activist, although that was thrust upon her.
No, it's true. All my aunt wanted to do was to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And a variety of circumstances that were really thrust upon her put her in such a position that she became, by the power of her personhood, I think, a symbol for the ways to move forward. She said that She was never cut out for hand-to-hand combat. And I think that that was true. But she was such a great artist that it's unfortunate that her role as a symbol somewhat overtook the appreciation for her as an artist. But now there's the United States Postal Stamp with her likeness, and I think that she can rest assured that her place both in American history and in musical history is assured.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started making inroads internationally as a conductor, as an African-American conductor, did you have anything similar to have to deal with? Did you have a decision to make there?
Well, John, I never really thought of myself being special in that way. It's obvious, and other people might have. I guess the second most noticeable characteristic is the fact that I was walking with crutches and braces, and that became more dominant in some people's minds, perhaps, than anything else. I never considered it to be an obstacle, and it never was in terms of what happened after my time with the Philharmonic and how the career developed. I do think that it's natural to assume that if racism is a part of the country, then it's a part of every aspect of it, including the music business. But if I look back upon my career, I can't say that there was anything that I didn't have, didn't get because I was black. Now, partly that can be naivete, but I don't have any regrets. And I know many of my non-black colleagues who would like to have had the career that I've had.
Mm. Now, just again, on a purely logistical point of view, as you say, you know, being black was just one sort of visible difference, the other being that you now do conduct from a wheelchair.
Well, that's since a year, and it's interesting because at the time that I had begun, and when I conducted the Philharmonic as a Metropolis winner and served with Lenny, I was conducting using crutches and braces. And so the idea of conducting from a wheelchair was just beyond the pale. And when, as a result of post-polio, I was forced, starting last year, to use a wheelchair, I had to revisit the same thinking process that I had when I started using crutches and braces. And I said, well, I don't know whether people are going to buy this. Or certainly I was just beginning at Juilliard, and I wrote to President Polisi, and I said, you know, this is starting for me, and I don't want to visit my limited mobility upon Juilliard. And I said the same thing to my new orchestra, the managers of the new orchestra in Tokyo, because it's one thing to say, well, you have to because of Americans with disabilities, but that's not the way we think. And I must say that Dr. Polisi's response at Juilliard and the other places where I was going to be employed was so positive, not just polite, but genuinely encouraging. So I guess that this is a whole new territory as the crutches and braces were. So I don't think about it, and it's worked. The wheelchair has worked well. Logistically, it requires a wheelchair that can elevate, and then I'm also on the podium.
Right.
And
on the other hand, your arms are free.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's nothing. As long as the essential tools you're using are not impaired, then it works.
Well, those essential tools did a pretty amazing thing in Oregon, where for 23 years you led the Oregon Symphony. Now, you know, you mentioned Leonard Bernstein. I mean, you and he sort of, you know, working together at the New York Philharmonic. What Leonard Bernstein did with the New York Philharmonic, he inherited an incredible orchestra. You went out to Oregon and had basically a community orchestra, it seems.
Well, it was a regional orchestra when I went there. Larry Smith was my predecessor, but there was tremendous audience response to the orchestra. So as far as having an audience base, that was there. But it was a regional orchestra in many ways. We accommodated the schedule of the orchestra, accommodated the working schedule of the players. And it was decided on the part of the board when they were looking for a music director that they wanted to move into the ranks of major orchestras. And I just told them, well, if you want to do that, you're going to have to spend money. And if you're going to be competitive to attract the players, and also you're going to have the situation in which you're rehearsing in the hall in which you're playing your concerts. None of this rehearsal hall business. And they said, good, let's do it. And they raised the money. And one helps them raise the money, of course.
Did they know that they were hiring a conductor who had a degree in business from the Wharton School?
Well, it helped because I think what's necessary is that you as a musician or as an artist can make requests or demands that this happen or the other thing happen for musical reasons. But with the Wharton degree, I was able to translate those requests and the reasons for those into pure, simple business terms that most of the business people on the board understood, and it helps to be able to read balance sheets and to see how things can work for the benefit of the music. That was the goal. Whether you have wonderful musicians that you're paying well, or a new hall, or rehearsing on stage, it all benefits the music, so that the money that's raised is going for the purpose of making great music.
We're speaking with James DePriest. One of his new jobs is he's the director of conducting and orchestral studies at the Juilliard School. I have to guess that business smarts are a pretty useful thing to have when you're teaching kids the realities of the music world.
Well, yes, I think that there are a variety of aspects that have nothing to do with conducting or preparing for a concert that impact greatly what you're able to do. And fortunately, the conducting program there is a graduate program, so that we have musicians who have been well trained, and there are only four or five of them, so that we're able to focus on extremely talented young musicians. And the great thing at Juilliard is that they have the opportunity to hone their skills working with an orchestra. Very often in the conservatories, they will work with two pianos, and that really, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't cut it as far as training conductors. So that it is, it's wonderful, and you bring all that you know to bear on their development.
Well, that's kind of how we feel about music on this show. You bring everything you know. It's not just off in a little box somewhere. It's part of your life. It's part of who you are. It's part of a community. And James DePriest, you mentioned somewhat limited mobility now that you're confined to the wheelchair.
Well,
but it doesn't seem to...
No, it's really the mobility has increased. Rather than dropping my wife off and having her do whatever she's going to do in terms of shopping, we do it together. I would never
so
have
you're
been,
all over the place now.
Would never have been able to go to Central Park and see the gates with my crutches and braces. It would not have been as tempting as it is. So I have increased mobility in that sense.
Well, you're going to need it going back and forth between New York and Tokyo. James DePriest is the new music director of the Tokyo Metropolitan Symphony and the new director of conducting and orchestral studies here in New York at the Juilliard School. James DePriest, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
You're listening to Soundcheck.